Okay, so tonight we're going to touch upon, we're actually going to move back a little bit. We're going to move back, okay? Right now, where we're holding, we're jumping around a little bit because we did already the Magen Avraham Shachtaz, which is 1600s, mid-1600 almost, later 1600s. Then we're going back to, we did the Maral mi Prague, Rabbi Yehuda Leva, and buckle up, we're going to have some fun. I hope everyone came prepared. So, Rabbi Yehuda Leva, who lived in the early 1500s, who was older than the Rama, and tonight we're going to go to the Shita Mikubetzos. The Shita Mikubetzos, we are all familiar from Yeshiva. He's definitely been quoted once, sometime, almost guaranteed. You cannot have made it out of a high school without hearing about the Shita. Now, there's the Shita Loyagunmi. If anyone calls him Asifas Zikanim, that's another name for Shita Mikubetzes. The same concept. Shita Mikubetzes is the person who, you know, garnered and accumulated all the different opinions and spelled them out for you and gathered them together in one address. Okay? It's been done before, it's been done after, and, you know, many people call nowadays the generation we live in as a generation of Likute, Basar Likute, or Dar HaMalakdim, and whatever. We're garnering from previous generations. This is a precedent set by Rabbi Tzalel Ashkenazi, who was the Shita Mikubetzes. So here we go. When was he born? Let's take a step back. He was born...
Get ready.
He was born in the year Resh Peh. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a general rule. Now, anyone who wasn't here, you have to remember this for the rest of your life. Anyone? What? No. 1520. You ready? Anyone who was born within the 5,000th of the Common Era, 5,000th of the Hebrew years, follow me carefully. The cross, when we entered the Hey Tufshin Pei Gimel, was the year 1240 in the Common Era. Which means anyone who was in history from the last 850 years, give or take, will always be within this rule. When you see the years Resh Peh, he was born in the years Resh Peh, you just take 1240 and add Resh Peh. Resh Peh is 280, 1240, 280, 1520. Okay, so again, we're gonna review this again and again, because that's way, whenever you see these years, the year Tach, this is a very classic one. Tach v'tach, the Xeris Tach was the year 1648. Okay, we've said this many, many times, and for any new people, now you know. Okay, we're all equipped. So, he was born in the year Resh Peh. Now, where is he from? He was born in Eretz Yisrael. Now, he, ready, notice his name. There were no surnames. Surnames are the creation of the early 1800s. About right after Chaim Volozhiner, he was so-called Volozhiner, right? Because he was from Volozhin. So, proper surnames, proper last names did not happen until the 1800s. Anyone before that, there's usually some affiliation with either the city, their father, their mother, as we mentioned, or the mother-in-law. The Marsha was Adel's. Adel was his mother-in-law. The Gra'a. There are those who question whether Kramer was his last name. Okay, that's Aleph. I don't think that's what you were asking. But there are those who question his last name in general, number one. Number two, there could have been exceptions. Also, you'd be surprised, right? The guy's name, last name is Eisenstadt, which is a town. The guy's name is, right, Berger, because he dealt in wood. It's not fair, right?
Small family.
Right. Weiss, right? Okay. Schnee, whatever it was. So, so here it goes. He was born in Eretz Yisrael. He went to learn in Mitzrayim by the Radvaz, Rav David Ben Zimra. So now, if I were to have some fun, I'm sorry I'm having a little too much fun tonight. If I were to have some fun, the Shita was a Rishon or an Achron. Don't all say it at once. Okay, good. That's what I wanted. Achron, Rishon. What, the Radvaz? Talmud of the Radvaz? He was born in 1520. So, if you're going to tell me he's a Rishon, so the Rama was a... Right. And they lived in the same exact time. Right. So that's where it gets like very tricky. What's what and who's who? The Radvaz many consider a... Not the Ridvaz. Shuvas Radvaz. The Ridvaz was in the 1900s. Okay, fine. Shuvas Radvaz, yeah, Rav David Ben Zimra. He was in Mitzrayim, he was Sephardi.
Also, he was a Pirush on the Rambam. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Same person. He's a very early Akron, if he is. Okay? He's definitely near the border. So, he learnt by the Radvaz in Mitzrayim. We might need a part two on the Shita at this rate. He learnt in Mitzrayim by the Radvaz. He goes on to... He's in Tzfas for a little bit. Then he winds up in Yerushalayim. And he's accepted by all. Sfardim Ashkenazim, the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael at the time, was predominantly Sfardi. Yeah? And there were scattered people who... Well... Oh. So now, this is the cool part. There were many people who actually made the trek from Europe to more eastern lands. I'll tell you something fascinating. The Aruch HaShulchan goes and tells you, he's actually, his son shares it with us. The Aruch HaShulchan's son was? Teretimima, very good. Teretimima wrote the Mekar Baruch. In the Mekar Baruch, he goes and tells you. Very good. Are you related?
I'm an Epstein.
Oh, we got. Nice to meet you. Okay, exactly. This is exactly where I'm going.
From Spain, 1492.
Thank you very much. You took the words out of my mouth. So that's where it's a very cool thing. The Aruch HaShulchan goes and tells you that I come from Reb Chaim Ben Venisti. Chaim Ben Venisti was a Sfardi. You don't get more Sfardi? And Reb Chaim Ben Venisti was a Knesset HaGedolah, who was a grandson, great-great-grandson of Reb Zerachia HaLevi, the Baal HaMa'or. So Reb Yechiel Michel Epstein from Nevardik is an enikel of Reb Zerachia HaLevi, who argued with the Ramban from Spain. Because there were those, right? There were those, they were traveling both ways. There were those who left Europe for Eretz Yisrael and those who went from Spain into Europe. That's why if you look carefully at the names, you really have to go and so we have touched upon this. That's a very valid point. So the Spanish Jews really overtook and overwhelmed the Sephardi Minhagim. Because there were Moroccans in Morocco well before the Inquisition. Well before 1492, there were Moroccans in Morocco. There were Iranians in Iran for a long, long time. Yeah? Since Poras. They didn't really leave so much. Yemen's been around forever. Yemen didn't really budge for different reasons. Because they didn't really have any outside... there was no mixing and no mishing of any sort. Nevertheless, the Spanish people, when they left, they had all the yeshivas. Castilla and all the Torah centers of Spain were all the Sephardi yeshivas. So when they went into each and every respective city, and they moved to Morocco, and they moved to Iran, and they moved to... Some of them moved to Europe. No, they didn't go to Eastern Europe. They went to Turkey, Italy, Greece. Turkey was the biggest, because the Sultan at the time, this is really that Kufa, because we're right there. He was born, Reish Pei was, when was the Inquisition? It was in 1492. Let's do the other way around. Can anyone give me the Hebrew year? This is very hard. 1492 is 1240, so give me the... What? Reish Nun Beis. Rabbi Klein bails us all out. Reish Nun Beis, exactly. So in the year Reish Nun Beis, he was only born... Rabbi Saul Ashkenazi was only born in the year Reish Pei. It wasn't that much later. Yeah? 28 years later. So these things were still fresh. There were many survivors who left. There were still Muranos who were undercover. This is not like so foreign. So that when they went, we're going to have to do a part two for sure. And a part two of the Maral. So when they went and they moved into each city, they had a Masurah. they had a real Masera from generation to generation, from the Rosh to the Rajbo, from the Rajbo to Rabbi Yoina to the Ramban even further, the Goinim. They, right, that famous Reb Shmuel Anagid, who went on a boat, and they wound up dispersing into many different lands. When we do the Goinim, if we ever move back, we'll get there as well. So where are we? You ready? We're at Rebbe Tzal Ashkenazi. So to answer your question, they definitely overwhelmed a lot of the Minhagim. And in Morocco, they had two different shuls, the Moroccans, the old-time Moroccans, and the Spanish who moved to Morocco. But they were more learned, so the Moroccans folded to the Svardi, and that's why all Minhagim, some people call it Edot HaMizrach, many call it Svardi. Svardi, it's not fair. There's only one country. There's so many countries of Svardim. Svarad is Spain, because most of their Minhagim came from, so you're Svardi. If you're an Epstein, and you're related to Aruch HaShulchan, okay, so you're Svardi. Hate to break it to you. You're from Navardic, and really all the way back to Spain. For all we know, we're all Svardim. This is not the single route. Okay, so here we go. Back to Rebbe Tzal Ashkenazi. His family came from Germany and went the other way. They went eastward. So they kept their origin, name of origin, as Ashkenazi. But he integrated well and pretty seamlessly into the Svardi world. So he was born in Eretz Yisrael, moves to Mitzrayim, learns the Dover Ben Zimra, and they all tell over one story, fascinating story, that it couldn't have been the Ottoman Empire. I don't believe the Ottoman Empire was going in the 1500s. No, so Kushtinda, I believe, is Constantinople, has a bunch of different names on the way. So they sent a Nagid. A Nagid was a representative who had official powers from the Sultan. So he came to town, and he was going to be the representative representing all the Jews of Mitzrayim to the empire back in Turkey. So I don't know what empire this was. Okay, we'll have to clarify. Anyone knows, let me know. But they all tell over the following story. This Nagid comes into town, and, you know, there's not too much that's new, right? Ein chadashach hashemesh, history repeats itself, whatever catchphrase you want to use, they all ring true. There's not much that's new. He comes into town, he says, you know, Maya Hanilei Rabbanan, what do we need the rabbis for? What do we need these old men for? I'm in charge. I was appointed and I have government, you know, empowered directives that I can enforce. I will make the call. And the leader of Mitzrayim at the time, Egyptian Jewry, was the Shita Mikubetzas, Rebbe Tzal Ashkenazi, who inherited and took the place of Rebbe David Ben Zimra, who was the chief Rav of Mitzrayim. And he fought it out with him. He said, absolutely not. If we're running Yahadus, we're running Yiddishkeit, Yiddishkeit is led by Rabbanim, who know the Torah, and that's how we lead Yiddishkeit. I don't care who you are. So, obviously, in good fashion, he made up a story against the Shittim Kibetzas that he was unloyal to the king. Sounds familiar? This is every 50, 100 years. They try to do this thing, try to get them against their local government somehow, whatever storyline it takes. And he sends representatives back to the ruler and ends up getting him dethroned. Next thing you know, he winds up in Yerushalayim. So many Svarim and historians say it wasn't so simple for him to stay in Mitzrayim after that showdown. And he moves to Eretz Yisrael. The Nagid got dethroned, and Rebbe Tzal Ashkenazi no longer stayed in Mitzrayim. Very shortly after, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. He succeeded in dethroning him, but at a cost. At a cost that he no longer was not a safe for him to stay in that area. So he goes to Eretz Yisrael. He becomes, ironically, again, this is a German Jew. born in Eretz Yisrael, moved to Mitzrayim, learned in Mitzrayim, then moves back. Okay?
What do we got?
Yeah, we got 4 minutes. Amazing. Oh. So, yeah, good. That's a very interesting point. Yeah, Ashkenazi nowadays is predominantly a Sephardi name, which in its very essence, it's funny, right? Because if you would meet a guy with the last name Litvak, usually Litvish, this one doesn't work. It doesn't work. Ashkenazi is Sephardi. Yeah, valid point. I don't know. No. I don't know if this is the cause, but it's definitely that is the point. The question is what you do with that. I cannot say anything conclusive or definitive. So, where are we now? So we're in Eretz Yisrael. He opens a yeshiva. He's a rav. He has a yeshiva, and he writes as well the Shita Mikubetzes. Okay? He also wrote Shuvas.
Shita's written in Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah. Well, I will verify. I don't know exactly. It was actually printed in Tzfas. So there was a little confusion. When was he in Tzfas? The first printing says it was printed in Tzfas. Why was he in Tzfas? Okay, you're right. You caught me. And then he returned to Mitzrayim before moving to Yerushalayim. So it was printed while over his time in Mitzrayim, it was printed in Tzfas. It's a very far trip, all the way north, Mitzrayim. A lot to Tzfas is very far. Yeah, it can be a 3-hour car ride. It's very far. So here's where the fun begins. Who is Talmidim? The Arizal was a Talmud of Rabbi Bezalel Ashkenazi in Nigla. Not too shabby. Not bad. Yeah, he was Ashkenazi, right? He was a Luria. He was a cousin of the Marshal. Marshal was a Luria. The Arizal was a Luria. The same family. He was definitely Ashkenazi. There are those that claim he wasn't a Talmud, he was a Talmud Chaver. They were counterparts because the Arizal learned by the Radvaz as well. That's where the confusion begins, that did they learn by the Radvaz together, or did he learn by the Radvaz as well as, which is not so, you know, many people, let's say Mir Yeshiva, take an example, they learned by Rabbi Asher Arieli as well as some of his Talmidim, the Magid Yeshirim in English, are all Talmidim of Rabbi Asher Arieli. So you could have learned by both. It's not such a foreign thing. If the old rabbi has been doing it for a while, you can catch both. So it's not such a crazy thing. The Arizal was a Talmid as well as, who else did they quote? A lot of interesting names that I wasn't so familiar with. Okay, so where are we? We have 1 more minute left. Here we go. So what was Shita Mikubetzes? He says, he writes a whole schmooze explaining why he chose to write Shita Mikubetzes. He said he was trying to convey a certain appreciation and deference to the Rishonim before him. He writes, I'm not doing anything. I'm just quoting those who lived before me. And that's really what he does. But again, if any of our Rebbeim have ever quoted in the Shir, how he quotes it, the context in which he brings it, how he sets them up, and then how he deciphers what they were coming to say is where the gold is. But he was just coming to say, I have nothing to say. I just, Asif Asikainim, I gathered, that's what he initially called it. It was turned to the Shita Mikubetzes, which is now a borrowed term. That's how much of an imprint it had on Torah literature. The Medrash Shmuel, Reb Shmuel di Azida, who wrote the Medrash Shmuel on Pirkei Avos, who was during the time of the Arizal, one generation down, he is called, the Medrash Shmuel is actually called, the Shita Mikubetzes. Al Pirkei Avos. It's not what it's called. It's called Medrash Shmuel. He named it Medrash Shmuel because it had such a a status of being the Shita Mikubetzes. So, that was, we'll see who we do first, the Maral or the Shita, part two. That was Rabbi Tzalal Ashkenazi, a Rav in Mitzrayim, Rav in Eretz Yisrael, who they also say got busy with Pidyon Shvuyim. Pidyon Shvuyim is actually an interesting application. I wonder if it has any halachic application. One of the Muslim strong hands in Yerushalayim at the time closed with force the Ramban Shul because they were not happy. It was in such close proximity to their places of worship. They closed it down on ransom. And the Shita Mikubetzes went to collect funds to bail out the Ramban Shul. Which is very interesting, because they bring down that he was Oisik and Pidyon Shvuyim. As we know, he bailed out the Ramban Shul. So, that was the Ritzal Ashkenazi.
Or if you bail the Shul, I would bail the people.
Yeah, but where do we find such a precedent that shuls are worthy to Pidyon Shvuyim? So, that was our Ritzal Ashkenazi, and we should definitely all continue to learn his Torah, and now we at least have an understanding of when he lived and who he was.
Well, it's interesting, going back to the first show, you talked about how some people... Some